D.O.T.
All right, so let's jump into this. So if you guys want to read about this esteemed panel, you can go online and see all of their wonderful bios. This is a really stellar panel, though. So why don't we just start down and just quickly describe your role in the world of advanced television. Helen, why don't you start?
So I'm Helen Katz from Publicis, and I have been working in the advanced television space kind of as long as it's existed. It's a long time. My agency was involved in the first addressable TV trials back in 2000. What year was it, Andrew?
I don't want to admit.
Yeah, a long time ago. And I focus, my background is in research, so I look at everything from a research and measurement standpoint.
So Dan Aversano with Turner. I run our ad innovation group and programmatic solutions team. So that's building solutions using data, analytics, and technology. God, I feel like I've been in around advanced TV since I used to work for you back at Nielsen when
with Pete,
that's right, when we were first trying to put together a bunch of the buy data sets and the watch data sets, so intimately familiar with multiple aspects of it.
My name is Zach Soreff. I'm the president of Sawyer Studios, which is an entertainment advertising agency specializing primarily in independent film. We grew up in digital. Well, we grew up originally in traditional. Then we moved to digital, and we embraced advanced television about 7 years ago because our clients typically don't have big national untargeted budgets. So we're coming at the whole advanced TV space from the digital side.
Hi, everyone. Pete Doe, Chief Research Officer at Clipped. Clipped is a sell-side platform for advanced linear TV. We're also collaborating with SpotX, who some of you will have seen on the previous panel, to bring sort of cross-platform advanced audiences, and that's a challenge, as you can imagine. I also chair a group called the Advanced Target Standards Group. Howard, you're part of that, Helen as well, and Dan, you were a founder member of that group, but you've devolved.
Carl Rosen from my team goes.
Exactly, Yeah, you've given that to Carl now. So
he's selling cell phones.
Right, yeah. The Advanced Target Standards Group was set up a few years ago to bring standardized methods and approaches to advanced linear TV.
Andrew Ward with NCC Media on the sell side. Anything I know about the advanced advertising landscape has been born out of my history working with Helen. So for better or worse, Helen has been my mentor for a number of years in this space. And when you look at what NCC's charge is in the marketplace is to begin to think about how do we federate, harmonize, unify advanced advertising solutions across the MVPD landscape such that we can bring the necessary scale and consistency and simplicity to the buy side to activate many of the things that we'll talk about today.
Great. So I approached this panel, and when I pitched it to Tracy, the concept was we have these great capabilities, but the market is not as far ahead in adopting it as we might all hope. And you know, Helen and Zach representing the advertiser spend part of it, Dan and Andrew representing the monetization yield part of it. There was some research done by Forrester last summer that said, you know, roughly 15% of advertisers say they're using advanced TV, another 35% say they're testing it, and that would mean 50% are sitting on the sidelines. Do you guys agree with that? Is that an accurate read of where the market is in terms of adopting this stuff?
At any one point, probably. I mean, I think the majority of our client base is testing or has tested, some form of advanced TV, whether that's addressable, connected, or data-driven linear. I think it's fair to say it's not always on yet. And to me, that's kind of where we need to get to, where it isn't always on phenomenon.
I think if you asked a lot of advertisers about what they're spending money on, a lot of them would probably say programmatic ahead of advanced TV. But then it might be a misconception that you can just switch on OTT on a programmatic DSP. So there might be some people don't even understand that they're actually buying advanced TV because they're buying video, and that video can be omnichannel on a DSP.
Right. And I think from the sell side, so we're a multi-billion-dollar sales organization. I would say going into next year, 15% of our revenue, give or take, is tied to what we would describe as sort of advanced advertising deals, whether it's on the data front, whether it's with respect to targeting could be addressability, or measurement on the back end in some fashion.
And I'd actually just want to add that if you sat through most of the presentations today, you've heard a lot of people on the stage talking about how their revenues from advanced TV have really been increasing in the last couple of years. So I think that's another indicator that...
Yep.
So, I mean, from my perspective, I kind of like what Helen said. I feel like at any given point, that number is probably right. But in totality, when you look at all the different ways to activate, whether it's addressable, you know, data-driven linear, or targeting within non-addressable TV, connected TV, it's probably more like 90-95%. I think that the challenge, though, is it's growing quickly, but you still have too many people that are in this test mode with it, right? So they do one campaign in first quarter, and then they're trying to measure it. Did it work? Did it not work, right? Which is important, don't get me wrong. But that's been the challenge. And that number is probably true. You probably have probably less than half that are consistently actively doing
it. The only advertiser I've heard of who said, no, we're definitely not interested in advanced television. We're happy with demographics, and in fact, just households, was a major CPG advertiser.
Oh, you're not going to name them?
Come on, Pete.
I forget
it's
who.
5 o'clock. People are here.
I forget who they are.
They don't have a cocktail.
I completely forget who they are. They're a CPG. Maybe the P&G is a clue in that CPG. I don't know.
In Cincinnati.
But it also reminds me of what Jonathan Stoyer said. Well, in some cases, you're just advertising to people with mouths, right? So. But this was one example where they said, yeah, we're not too worried about targeting. Occasionally we are with things like, you know, razors for men or women and stuff like that. But often it's just trying to maximize reach.
Yet they still hammer us over 18 to 49. Yeah.
I think we focus too much on this maximization of reach for this whole conference. This whole conference is all about how do you get people who are already spending hundreds of millions of dollars on TV to spend more money on advanced TV. But if you look at who the buyers are today, a buyer today is a millennial. A target audience is often a Gen Z person. And if you then stacked up how many of these people are cord cutters, half at least, right? Moviegoers, half at least, right? There's a statistic came out, I think it was yesterday, over 70% of young people are now saying their primary living room screen experience is streaming. So scale, there is no scale in a cord cutter for linear, right? The scale is all digital or advanced TV.
Well, that's why people are asking for more reach, because they're losing it.
Yeah. So that's
why people
that.
Are talking about it and focusing on it for all the reasons you said.
I totally get it, but there are plenty of people today who are spending their money on digital who will migrate to advanced TV if they feel like it's measurable, if they feel like it's targetable, and then that's a digital dollar that's migrating towards TV. I don't think there's this sort of one-way conversation that it's like linear dollars go to advanced. Just as many digital dollars are moving to advance, maybe more, in our world.
You know, I think one thing to keep in mind, we've been at this for a while, and Helen and I referenced some early addressable trials. One thing to keep in mind is that I think what we're seeing from a macro perspective is this, on the distributor side, this intersection of content and technology. And when Helen and I started in the addressable environment, we were very much in an analog architecture. And it was a little like pushing a string when you think about trying to activate data and haul back exposure files and link that to first-party consumer data and be able to deliver a message addressably. So I think really the reason we have wind in our sails and you're starting to see a much broader adoption is really the ability to activate through that technology. Yeah. As the cable plant evolves from analog to digital to now cloud-based, you look at a company like Comcast and the X1 platform on the Xfinity environment, that enables these capabilities. And that product is deployed not primarily for advertising, it's deployed primarily to protect and grow the consumer base in the face of digital competition. So I think you're starting to see momentum on the sell side as that technology evolves from analog to cloud-based.
Yeah, and it seems like one of the issues we have, look, this world has probably gotten too complex for the size of it and the need to transact and run all of your great businesses. Helen, from an agency perspective, I mean, you guys have been planning at an overall media perspective and at a network optimization perspective against advanced audiences forever, right? I mean, this is not a new concept.
Correct, yes.
So to what extent is it then there's some lack of awareness that if you think about what Dan has built in terms of his ad products, what Andrew has built with his ad products, that, you know, it's great to have the allocation by day part, but that's not all of the incremental value that advanced television provides. I mean, maybe Dan and Andrew, talk a little bit about your capabilities then and come back to Helen and, you know, is there value in that stuff?
Sure, I'll start, Andrew, and then maybe jump in. So we have a broad array of different capabilities in what you might call advanced TV. That's everything from, on the core linear side, what we would call highly targeted campaigns that are almost spot-level optimization, right? So literally breaking out selling titles and selling individual units based on forecasting that unit and what audience composition would be, all the way through to, you know, if you think about some of our assets, something like CNN with probably 68-plus different distribution touch points through advanced targeting that we do through a Roku platform, through potentially things like addressable VOD that we might do on a DirecTV footprint. So it really runs the gamut, but I would say at the core of all of it, it's kind of based on two things. Everything that we're building, it's based on precision of placement, right? So how can we get more precise in terms of putting the ad in front of the exact right person at the exact right time, and then leveraging data and analytics, right? So that's the technology side, data and analytics to inform that placement, right? So I want to be able to put an ad directly in front of Howard on Tuesday at 3 o'clock for a car, but I also need to know, yeah, Howard's the right guy at 3 o'clock on Tuesday because I know that he's going to the dealership at 6 based on a lot of other forecasting and predictive modeling we've done.
So, Andrew, talk about...
You know, I think in our world, we think of advanced advertising in three primary threads, I guess, if you were to chunk it up. The first on the data side, and when we talk about data, really how do we think about in an anonymized, aggregated, privacy-compliant manner? I'm obligated to say that. I think I bolt up right in bed most nights saying that. But how do we begin to think about the subscriber file and the deterministic data of a billing address, that name and address file? How do you think about linking that physical address to an IP address? How do you tie set-top box viewership data to that? How do you tie first-party brand CRM data to that? How do you link third-party syndicated data? So how do we think about standing up a data practice that looks in the television ecosystem in a manner that's far more robust than the traditional age-gender environment that we're in today? Then, so that's a thread into itself. The second, I think, is we start to think about targeting. And targeting could be contextual targeting. Where do I find that audience? By network daypart program. It could be by device. Do I find them on live linear television? Do I find them on a connected screen? Do I find them on demand? It could be geo, DMA, zip code, ultimately down to household. How do you think about that one-to-one connection? So there's a track around targeting. And then, as a couple of folks have mentioned, how do we think about performance measurement in a more robust manner? And the notion of, obviously, traditional media efficiency metrics, reach, unduplicated reach frequency, but not against an age gender, against a more richly defined target audience. And then effectiveness, how do we begin to think about linking exposure data to brand outcomes, and whether those brand outcomes are more bottom of the funnel oriented around sales data or more top of the funnel tied to purchase intent and brand awareness. So those three tracks of how do we stand up federated solutions across our distribution footprint that focus on data targeting and measurement.
So Helen, when Dan's sales guy and Andrew's sales guys come and visit you and say, let's just think about linear television for now, we're going to re-optimize your plan, we're going to use all of our data science, we're going to get you more, how do you react to that?
I say that's great. I have no problem with any of that. I think the challenge is for us to do that, as opposed to say, hey, you guys go do that for us,
right.
How do we bring it all together, right? So it's sort of an infrastructure or plumbing problem,
right,
or challenge, not really a problem. And it's also, I think, just, it's, and we've had this conversation on several other panels today, it's the education of both the TV and digital, which are horribly siloed in many organizations. How do we make sure that both are comfortable with this notion of yes, you can get to response-based measurement and even response outcome-based guarantees. And you know, we've lived with this age gender mindset of you buy a program for, you know, however long, 60, 70, 80 years.
1964, was it, Dan? He actually studied that.
Well, we switched from, it was, Leonard Goldstein from ABC with American Bandstand, when they actually moved from Household to the first demo rating because they performed better with 18 to 34-year-olds. Yeah. It was Jack Washlog who actually first wrote the article, and I dug it up for a presentation like 6 years ago. So credit Jack, not me.
There we go. So, Pete, you know, one of the things that's been required to fuel a lot of this is a massive advancement in the data science around how we think about forecasting. I mean, it used to be easy, right? We would do one estimate by quarter across five different demographics by selling rotation, right? Now we're treating data much more scientifically. Maybe describe a little bit about what Clipped has built.
Yeah, sure. I said before, Clipped is a sell-side platform for linear television, and so we're fueling some of these advanced capabilities, Discovery Engage, for example, and what they're doing is creating proposals that they are then going to go to agencies with and negotiate advanced audience deals, so not age and gender. Now, there may still be some element of age and gender guarantee alongside that as well, but basically looking to forecast how an auto-intender target or frozen pizza buyer target is going to perform in a linear schedule over a period of time sometime in the future. And the forecasting requirements around that are fairly stringent because you obviously got to get it right, but there's more variability around the data when you're looking at a smaller target than something broad like women 25 to 54. And you run into issues of sampling error when you're still working with Nielsen panel and so on. And that also then leads to considerations of what is your overall delivery likely to be and what can you guarantee. And we've got some quite sophisticated techniques that allow us to calculate the likely statistical variability around those. And everything we've tested, all the deals we've done, and we have seen a lot of deals, particularly this year, running through the platform, they perform pretty well. But they don't always perform exactly as you expect them to. And that's because the real world gets in the way. You have this beautiful plan that you've come up with, and then it doesn't quite run like that, and ADUs come into play. And when you're doing that, if you're going off the original plan, what you're going to find is that the units that are selected to replace the ones you originally selected aren't going to be as good for the advanced target. Why? Because if they were better, why didn't you select them in the first place? Mm. And so you're typically going to get an under-delivery compared with what you expect, unless you do some very active stewarding towards the advanced target. So there's a lot of science going into that, aside from the optimization piece as well, which, you know, I just sort of like glossed over completely, but to actually create an optimized deal that satisfies constraints of weekly weights, selling title inclusions, exclusions, network and day part configurations, whilst optimizing within a CPM for advanced target delivery. There's a lot of math going on. So, yeah.
Well, Pete, would you agree? I mean, complex. You need a couple of things, right? So the forecasting piece that you just described, right? Because in non-addressable TV, you need to be able to forecast where the audience is. But then you also need massive optimization engines or algorithms, right? Because at the end of the day, a media schedule today, unfortunately, is not as simple as I want auto-intenders and I have $1 million. It's I want auto-intenders, I have $1 million. Even though the demo CPM I shouldn't care about, it's got to be $20 to $25. I still need 15% in premium programming. Yeah, you can't be more than 45% in overnight. Oh, I have competitive separate. You have all of these parameters.
Exactly, yeah.
So you need a very, very advanced optimization piece. So I would say those two things.
And it has to run like that.
It has to run like, and to your point, you have to be able to steward against that, right? And that's really yeah. important. But those two, like if I were to boil it down, those two big buckets, like for a media company who does not have national adjustment, and none of us do, right? Those two things worth their weight in gold. If you can forecast where an audience is going to be, and it's not going to be perfect, but if you can do it with fairly sound accuracy, and you've built a really good kick-ass optimization model, you make a lot of money doing it.
And one of the things I wonder about is, as we move towards this more advanced marketplace, whether advertisers will, and maybe I'm just making this up, whether they will relax some of those constraints that they've had in the linear
Amen.
World.
Hallelujah.
Because they've needed them in the linear world, but if you do you need them as much in an advanced world where you are more likely to
certainly in digital, yes, that has already happened, right? So that people are a lot less concerned about where the ad lands and they're more concerned about who it's landing in front of.
It's still Matt, right? So let's and look, this is coming from the guy who's making his living.
Less, not
making his
not
living
zero.
Selling audiences, yeah.
No, I'm
right?
Not but saying zero either.
I'm not saying zero.
Like for us, and this is this is at the heart of why we created OpenAP. We found early on that we were literally competing. Turner would be competing with Viacom about who could come in, Helen, and give you a better, snazzier presentation, and who knew more about our optimization engine, and I understand MRI fusion data way better than you do, and that's not what we should be competing. Like, we've lost, to some extent, media companies have lost their way in that regard. Yeah, we should be building programming, we should be investing in talent, and all this other shit should just be easy and consistent and common across. That's the vision for OpenAP. Not going as fast, but it's a slow-moving industry, unfortunately, but we got to make this stuff simple and easy and consistent and stop trying to compete on it.
Yeah. I think one of the points, an analogy I'd offer is that I liken our business today to where the retail marketplace has been, where historically there was a fair amount of tension between making it up P&G and Walmart around shelf space, distribution, whatever it might be. And I think that same could be said and perhaps still said between the programmer and distributor relationship. And I think that in the retail marketplace, they said, hey, you know what? Our opponent is Amazon. Our opponent isn't one another. And I think the same thing is happening in the media marketplace today, that between the distributor side of the house and the programmer side of the house, how do we begin to work together to protect the entirety of the TV ecosystem and get back to building brands, which is really TV's strength, and how do we need to do that in a collaborative manner? And I think that's what, the whole premise behind OpenAP, which we support, how do we bring consistency and standards such that we look at the opponent being Google and Facebook and not one another.
Right, and that's exactly why we created the Advanced Target Standards Group and actually got Fox, Turner, and Viacom in the same room together, and OpenAP came out after that. So everybody's been saying this for a while, and it's actually happening. So I want to go back to, Helen, your point about just relaxing some of the traditional criteria on network day parts and programs and so on. You can do that in our software. You can say, I'm just going to optimize for audience. And then it blindly goes off and selects the cheapest, best inventory.
Price always matters.
Yeah, but within the constraints you've asked for, and it's optimized the number of impressions you're going to get at the price.
You just optimize for cheap.
But what's the output?
And it's a real mess. Because
what's the output? Is it a 15-minute segment on A&E that is more over-indexing for this audience?
Well, it's an advertising schedule, so it's going to say we're going to run 400 units between these dates on these programs.
But once you can look at the outcomes to that, in a linear world, you can't look at the outcomes. And I'm not saying I agree; it's not going to go to zero constraints, but in an advanced world where you can do that and you can actually measure the impact
on a one-to-one basis.
On a one-to-one
or
basis.
Or household one-to-one.
That's why I'm saying maybe that... I know overnight is always the day part that, a lot of optimization systems say put lots of money in
because it's cheap.
But also, if you're optimizing against impressions, it just says cheapest.
Right.
If you're trying to get to awareness... then you know that you don't really want overnight. You know you want some prime time engaging programs. Right. And if you don't have some measurement of attention or engagement in your optimizer, it's not going to reflect that. Yeah. So that's why people put the guardrails and why they will remain for a while, I think.
Right, but I guess my point is, how many guardrails do you need?
Not as many as we use today, that's for sure.
Depends what you want to do, right?
Yeah, right. Yes, absolutely.
But let's come back to that in a second.
Just one last point. Quick thought. My biggest concern is not about optimization, not about technology, not about data. My biggest concern is procurement. And when I look at the buy side and the pressure on the agency community around price and the constraints that procurement puts on them, that's my biggest concern, candidly.
And it's the wrong... So I'm sorry. I know, Howard, you're trying to get off this.
I've lost control of this.
So, Andrew, I wholeheartedly agree with you. And it's less about... I wouldn't mind procurement's involvement if they were willing to look at other metrics, right? The fact that, and I've long contended this, one of the biggest limitations to scale in audience buying a national TV are agency advertiser compensation models. I can't tell you how many times every upfront we get the phone call, hey, we just won this business. I need a 20% rollback. Why the fuck did you promise them a 20% rollback? Like, That's not my problem.
Right. And that's now how they're
holding accountable to that.
That's how they won the
business. That's how they won the business. And again, so it's, you know what? Hold them accountable to an ROAS number. That's fine. I can live with that.
Or a historical audience CPM.
Something. That would even
and
be better.
And blow up demos, right? So, Zach, talk a little bit about your view of the studio category, which is obviously very different. Helen has Kellogg's.
Right.
Probably easier to do advanced TV for something like that because I don't think any of us, you know, unless Dan has seven more kids, is going to change his consumption of the serial category. What's your view of sort of the challenges in the movie category versus maybe some of the other ad categories that are out there?
Well, we certainly don't have this long-term cumulative brand build that Kellogg's would have. We have to have
4 weeks.
We have, if that, you know, and I work in indie, you know, we have 20 of the top 50 and 30 of the top 100 film companies as clients, but none of the top 10. So we're working in the world of iTanya, not the world of Avengers.
Right.
And that's a big one,
yep.
You know, for us. We have, you know, we have Voxlux, go see it tomorrow. So we're working on specialist releases that have specialist audiences, and we're working with largely young millennial buyers and planners that are on the client side. So they are accustomed to not being able to afford national TV at all, right? So they, or very very infrequently. So when you go to them and you say, "I'm gonna, let's say, produce a schedule that's gonna spit out over-indexing, you know, women 25 to 34 across 15-minute segments on linear television," and there's gonna be 70% of these people are gonna be out of market for what you're trying to do anyway, and it's gonna sit on some show that doesn't feel right. It just doesn't feel, the whole thing doesn't feel very interesting in regular linear for these advertisers. So then what have they done instead? They've done a ton of social. They've done a ton of digital. We embraced programmatic almost 10 years ago. So we've been in the world of data segments and behavioral and one-to-one and device matching and graphing and all of those things for a long time. So now enter advanced television. So we start maybe 5 years ago, start playing around with OTT and TV everywhere and addressable and all of these kind of concepts of advanced TV. And that's become very interesting for these specialist kind of titles. Now we have this world of attribution, which I'm sure will probably come up in this panel, but we have this world now we have the IP, right? So now we expose somebody to a TV everywhere ad, we capture the IP address, we then expose all of the devices connected to that IP address to other complementary ads, then we track them transacting on Fandango, and we can say spot A had 15% more Fandango transactions than spot B, and then we can use that to inform a linear schedule. Our clients would rather buy linear, knowing that there's some real-time data that came out of a solution like that, than to just go and do some blunt instrument type of targeting.
Yep. So you actually brought up something really interesting that I think is a good sort of discussion, which is, and I asked it this morning at, there was an addressable panel. You know, we're in this like massive race to just clean up the who we want to target against, right? And obviously the linear TV model has a lot of waste in it. Should we be thinking at the same time, and this is, you know, Gerald Ford being able to walk and chew gum at the same time, almost as bad as a dated analogy as an American Bandstand. But what are the variables should we be thinking about when we're thinking about optimizing against outcomes? Because the who is not just all of it. There's response. And history of response and in market response, there's context, there's engagement in the show. There are a lot of other variables beyond just who are you trying to reach that drives ROI. And I wonder, do you guys think we're doing enough to be thinking about that at the same time? What other variables are out there?
So I'll sort of just jump in with you know, Turner's at a very fortunate time because now part of the AT&T family. I can say for the first time in my career, I am completely awash in data. I have more data and access to more data than I have ever seen or contemplated, probably maybe just behind Amazon, if. And we capture and catalog a lot of that data. And a big part of what we're doing with it, particularly the mobile device data, so things like geolocation, mobile web usage, app usage from 140-plus million devices, we've taken that, we've banged it up against set-top box data. And what we're working on right now is actually building, and it might not be spot level, maybe telecast level, but spot and or telecast level attribution models, right? So if you think about it, right, you have a unit in pretend, you know, you have a unit here in Rick and Morty on Adult Swim, right now in the world, Pete's forecasting point, we forecast 800,000 18 to 49-year-olds. In the audience world, a little bit better, right? Pete built a cool forecasting tool that tells us 50,000 Starbucks drinkers are going to watch it. Well, with what I just described, what we would essentially be doing is put Ford ad here at 11 o'clock p.m. tomorrow, analyze the creative type, and understand what that ad here, based on the forecast and the analytics that we've now produced, again, at that level, three people are going to go to the dealership because we have a closed loop with geolocation data. Hmm. Now, all of a sudden, that opens the door for us as a media entity for two things, right? One, I don't just have one unit, right? I got 50,000 units. And now each one of those units has a really cool piece of information about if you put your ad there, how many people go to your dealership? This one's 10, this one's 3, this one's 2, this one's 1. So now I can pick the best ones. It also completely changes the value proposition. The unit over here that was $25,000 only delivers one person. The one that was $5,000 actually delivers three people. Completely changes it. So one, we can optimize schedules on it. But two, we're actually willing to guarantee against that. So we've done three tests this year. I can't name the advertisers, but three live tests that we did, not with our data, actually with their data. These are clients who came out of DR, and we're actively building that into a new solution that hopefully by middle of next year we can start to do with some scale behind it.
So outcomes. What else?
In the same vein, you know, I completely agree with it, you know, attribution becoming a planning engine in a way. You know, the ability for us to take a brand advertiser's schedule, network, cable broadcast, 100 networks, spot, cable broadcast, addressable, and haul back exposure data from those various investments and bump that exposure data up against their CRM file rich audience segment definition, and then be able to push that exposure data to MTA partners such that TV now, you know, when you think about multi-touch attribution, it's really digital measurement. And a lot of it is bottom of the funnel, and TV doesn't get credit for driving that bottom of the funnel performance because TV exposure data really hasn't been included in those MTA models. So how can we begin to pull exposure data from network, spot, addressable, push to third-party analytic companies to begin to show the entirety of the marketing funnel, the impact that TV has on that marketing funnel, and whatever level from an ROI standpoint. So, you know, we're working with dozens of leading national brands in that space, and it's we're starting to see build practices around that function specifically.
So Zach, having heard both Dan and Andrew talk about optimization and response metrics, does that make you feel good, and do you want to give them all your budget now?
I think the best sentence was attribution as a planning engine.
Yeah, you can use that. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to use that.
That's a bumper sticker, but
because we absolutely do that. Yeah, and our whole proposition as an agency is how do you take digital data and use that to inform a TV buy? How do you take mobile data and use that to inform an outdoor buy? And how do you tie it all together and understand in a very fast moving way where you're going to move dollars? Because we'll move dollars on Friday into Saturday, and make really rapid changes based on what we're learning all the time. So what we say is we surface variables that drive performance. I know that I was reading about you, Helen, online and about TV return path data. And we're really interested in that as a concept because the more the TV industry can return data the way the digital industry does, we get 200 or 300 variables off of digital exposure and we get far fewer off of TV exposure. But when it all becomes converged in one thing and we can say these 16 variables are responsible for this level of performance and therefore worth this level of spend, that would be, you know, that would be how advanced TV would grow for us.
However exciting that is, and how much I want to get there, the other side of the coin that makes me nervous about that is what I think Dan said. For us as a business, we got to figure out yield.
Race to the bottom on price.
Yeah, that sounds.
We got to figure out yield.
That's exactly what happened with programmatic. Yep. Race to the bottom on price.
So I think the biggest from the sell side, I don't want to speak for Dan, but on our side, I think the biggest challenge is going to be less about data and targeting and measurement than it is yield optimization engines on our
end. So my boss, David Levy, has now coined the phrase, the company with the best yield management system wins. That is his entire focus. That's what he wants us marching towards. So it's spot on.
There's something highly depressing about that statement.
I would like it. I unfortunately, I wish we were at a time. This is kind of my point before. We a little bit all media has lost its way. Yeah. I wish it was the company was the best programming, but well, unfortunately, that's
yeah, or the most efficient media.
Well, the reality is
we're without putting up barriers.
But here's what I would say: that's the yield management, right? So think about yield management both ways, right? Yield management is making the most. So you have all these seats here, some filled, some empty, right?
Yeah.
It's making sure that each seat goes to the exact best possible person. One, because it's really good for them. It's going right. to achieve what they're trying. But also because and if you do that, it should maximize the value of that seat.
Yeah.
So it's a two-way street, right? No, so I think it serves both.
And I just hate to think that there would be, and we see this all the time in digital and mobile, I hate to think that there's a company would take available inventory, put it in some kind of a black box, overlay some kind of brand on top of it, some kind of name or some kind of algorithm or some kind of something, and then sell it back at a higher price, right? This, we see this all
is
the time in mobile.
Google and Facebook?
Nielsen and ComScore.
There are a lot of very profitable companies that have done exactly that in digital. We reverse engineer their business models every day and don't use them anymore. And it's starting to, now we have clients like Amazon Studios, data-oriented company. Sure. They really care about how is the data being selected, and then how is it transparent? How do I measure it? All of those questions and all of these things that are about yield management, about protecting price and everything, in the end, they conflict with the natural human desire for transparency and efficiency. That's
why
our,
did, but why
our
did,
outlook.
So, I wouldn't say they conflict, right? So think of it as value proposition, right? You have empty seats in front of you. If that seat is the best possible seat for the movie that you're, I forget the name of the movie that you're launching, plug it again. What was it?
Vox Lux.
That one. For that one, that's the best possible spot. You want the ad to go right there.
Yeah.
You should be willing to pay more for that one than the other ones.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Right? So
absolutely.
It's a fair value exchange. That's what
but it has to be tied to outcomes, right?
Yeah,
as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Yes.
And I think what we're, the reality is that, you know, we have a $70 billion TV ecosystem that's largely historically an analog negotiation, mm-hmm. and we're starting to layer on digital-like attributes from a targeting and measurement and data standpoint. And that friction between the evolution of an analog business model and a more digital-looking business model is, I think, the friction that we're seeing.
And that's what other traditional media companies...
$70 billion...
Absolutely not. But look at Condé Nast, right? A traditional media company that was all contracted media is suffering now, you know, and it raced to the bottom on price for people like
that
too.
I think that's what on the buy and sell side that we're bumping.
And I don't want to single out Condé Nast if anybody's from Condé Nast. Great company, but you know they have struggled with that issue.
So it's a year from now. We're back on the stage. The room is packed. We've driven yield to put the best person in each seat.
Because it's not at 5 o'clock, right?
Yeah, right.
Well, Pete,
10:30 is more.
No, Pete, this is because Tracy was kind enough to schedule us around your schedule, so you don't get to do that, Pete.
Who says day parts aren't important?
That's right. That's right. So
that was where I was going with that. But yeah,
what has changed in the world so that Helen and Zach, you guys feel like you have the capabilities to do this more often, faster? Better data, driving better outcomes, and then maybe Dan, Pete, and Andrew, what's changed so that you guys feel like you're utilizing these capabilities more to drive more yield for your companies?
I think from my perspective, it's a few things. It's continuous education, and I said this in an earlier panel today, that partly it's sort of a natural evolution. The people that are in these jobs today, they're coming into these jobs today, these barriers are completely irrelevant to them. The digital versus right. TV doesn't even exist. I see this from I'm sure you see it with your kids as well. It's like, what are you talking about, right? And so as those people continue to sort of populate the buy side for sure and even the sell side, these barriers that we have put up because of the way the industry grew up will inevitably, I believe, maybe not disappear, but be diminished. And I think that's happening today, and I think even a year from now that will be reduced. At the same time, you're educating people about the data, right? We have this wealth of data from multiple sources that people on the traditional TV side and even traditional planning teams aren't used to dealing with, unless they were very digitally focused. And they've had to warm up to that, and I think that has been happening at an accelerated pace, I'd say, in the last 12 to 18 months. And I think that will continue so that by this time next year, when we talk about advanced targets, people will be a lot more comfortable, I'm ever the optimist, in working with them in a TV space, and importantly in a cross-media space. So we have to stop thinking about TV or advanced TV outside of the notion of the bringing in outdoor or what's left of print or audio. It's like we have to be thinking of this as a media ecosystem, because that's where the consumers are. They're not thinking in these siloed buckets.
Sure. Zach, what do you think?
Well, I think that linear, in the end of the day, is like a fax machine. It's over. And I think the more the standards improve and the pipes improve and the technology improves and the whole one-to-one targeting improves, the less there will be any contracted media at all. The same thing has happened in digital media already. So I think what we're...
Death of the upfront. I like
that. I think so, yeah. I think at the end of the day, there'll be a lot of people that have a vested interest that are going to try and protect it. But I think at the end of the day, it's when we get one-to-one, the only way to sell it is with automation. That's exactly what happened with digital. You really, the vast majority of the inventory now couldn't be contracted because it's like Swiss cheese, because these various companies have gone and grabbed these various users out of the bucket. And so now you need to grab the other ones, and it's all relative to a price. And I suppose what will take time is the biddable nature. I don't know if we'll ever go to a completely open marketplace, and I'm not sure that we should. It may not be 100% biddable for a while, and maybe it never will be. But I think at the end of the day, it's like all media, including outdoor, which is also going digital. It's going to be controlled by automation.
Andrew.
Yeah, I think you started the question, Howard, with a year from now, what was your nirvana kind of a state? In my mind, I think we're beyond the strategy point. I mean, there's no advertiser that you talk to say, hey, do you want to use richer data or dumber data? Do you want to more precisely target your audience across?
Apparently Pete knows a CPG who said that.
One of them. Or do you want to use richer measurement on the back end from an accountability standpoint? So everybody gets it. So in my mind, at least in our world where NCC sits, and we sell inventory across 70, 80 cable networks in 85 million homes, every market in the country, it's really about execution. At the end of the day, I don't want to talk about strategy anymore. I really want to talk about execution. Yeah. And how do we stand up unified solutions around data, around delivery, and around measurement that provide marketers the necessary scale, consistency, simplicity, such that they can access those opportunities without the executional burden and cost of doing business that currently exists. So for me, 19 is a year for execution.
Got it. Pete and Dan, real quick, because we just got the hook.
This time next year, we definitely have to have done better with cross-platform, but that doesn't mean that we do the lowest common denominator and just concentrate on devices without memory. It's actually people that matter. And connected TVs are typically watched by more than one person at a time. And if there's three people watching it and you're targeting the heavy shopper, that heavy shopper may be the fourth person in the household who's actually down the supermarket. Mm. So being aware of that, that just because it's got digital pipes doesn't mean to say it's the same. Television remains different.
Dan, last 15 seconds.
This
will
probably be the most provocative thing that I'll say, so I'll try to do 15. I think you need some people to win and you need some people to lose. Bottom line is between, we're building a marketplace in Xander, you have what's happening with NCC, you have OpenAP. These are three massive plays. If we bifurcate the market in three big ways, that's not good. I also think you have an entirely new streaming landscape. By fourth quarter next year, Disney Plus will be live, WarnerMedia streaming service will be live. Some people need to win, some people need to lose, and bottom line is you need consistency across so that advertisers can get scale in a simple way.
Right, great. Well, thank you. Join me in thanking these guys for a great discussion. Thank you.